Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Super Rugby Aotearoa Round 6 and the Super Rugby AU, or Super Rugby Gold, as we like to call it, round three. Reaction, review even, something along those sort of lines. You know what I mean. Reaction, review, all of that kind of stuff. Unresponsive pages, oh dear. We're going to be a bit low on stats, folks, as I don't seem to be able to pull up ESPN. We have four cracking games this weekend, all really, really close for us to delve into. And I say us because, yes, I'm not here all on my own. Don't worry. There's other voices you will hear. And those include Arshwin. How are you doing, sir?
Hi.
Hi. Stop looking at that house I've just sent you that I might buy tomorrow. Okay? Actually, concentrate.
Well, concentrate. Game on. I was not channeling the blues, not focusing.
And Cornflake arriving at the last minute, just like his team, winning it in the last second. So he is he is here to join us as well. How you doing, sir?
All I have to say is Highlanders.
Where's his yellow hat, though? Where's your yellow cap? Your yellow cap. You still got your yellow cap? I still got the yellow cap.
Yellow cap's never gone far behind. I'm going to add predict this game. The Highlanders win by two at the start of the weekend, just to let you know. So nailed that perfectly, as always. Yeah, never in doubt. Had 100% faith for boys to get the job done.
Really? Wow. even at 31-7 at halftime, I'd already updated my – at that point, I updated my driving ball versus the bookie to mark it as a win.
let's be honest, I think we've learned something from the Western Force in these opening 2 weeks of Super Rugby AU is that they can't play 80 minutes. The Chiefs aren't ever going to play 80 minutes, but we'll talk about that as we get to it. You know, we'll save the best till last.
Save the best till last? Okay, then. So you want to start with the let's start sort of chronologically with on Friday night. What's Friday night? It's party
long,
night. Well,
party right, night. Friday night's party a night. Long time ago.
That's why you make notes, Arshwin.
Oh.
So you remember.
That's why I failed at school.
Yes, well. Oh, dear me. And welcome to everyone who is on the live chat. Because, yes, hi, folks. I should actually just, let's do the formalities. You can listen to us. We're here at 8 p.m. every Sunday reviewing all the action. You can listen to us on Facebook, on Twitter, or on YouTube. Or you can listen to us on the go afterwards. Obviously, it's live on those three via the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Acast, all of those there. Nicholas has said, he's watching the Highlanders game at the moment and will be in soon. I think Cornflake was doing the exact same thing. Catching up on the game right up to the last second because, unfortunately, he has to work Sundays. I mean, really, what kind of employer makes you work Sundays? You are right, Aaron. It is an 80-minute game.
Or 81.
And Nocturnal writes, buzzing still about the Highlanders. I think we're buzzing about all these games this weekend, actually. So, yes, starting on Friday, Reds versus the Force. The Force zoomed out to a to an early 14-point lead. And I thought, wow, this is are the Force going to put it to the Reds here? One of the things that we've been talking about, Cornflake, in some of our previews we've done with the with the South African website and also here on New Zealand Sport Radio and your Cornflakes channel, is that the Force just run out of steam, don't they? I didn't expect them to run out of steam after basically 15 minutes, though.
That was a promising start for them, wasn't it? Yeah. I think they had a bit of a tougher ask against them, against this Reds team, who overall I think was one of the better sides in Australia. Some may agree or disagree, but yeah, they started off with Hurston Raw. I think they're probably going to do that quite often this season. They continue to get out there. They play well. They just don't have that ability to really not only play that the full game, but they just kind of fall off the game completely, don't they? They start off so well. They look like they're in touch, but they kind of get discovered. They kind of get found out. They kind of get overplayed, this sort of game, and allow their opponent to adapt to what they're going to do. It's 2 weeks in a row now. We've seen, you know, the Reds this week as well did it. They got absolutely hammered at the start, and then just like that, they turned it around and adjusted their game to actually make it play. So yeah, like Alex says, their best Aussie game so far by a mile. Yeah, 100%. I think biggest difference here in this game though was that the weather. It was nice and dry, good conditions. And what we've talked about before in these previews, especially with the likes of James O'Connor running that ship, is that he likes to play attacking rugby, he likes to get out there, and he likes to run the ball. So that definitely suited the Reds. And I think, you know, the Western Force, they competed. They played all right for a little bit. So it's positive. Positive from them to be fairly close in this game. But yeah, they got outplayed, I think, once the Reds actually got into their groove, got their game plan going, got a little bit of confidence, got over that initial learn the Western Force factor, and they were away on their horse after that.
Well, I think, in all honesty, a couple of kicks, and they could have been right in this to the end. I mean, they got an intercept try at halftime, and then straight in front of the posts, he gets charged down. I tweeted out at that point and said, look, we know what happens now. If you charge down a conversion, you win the game. We saw that happen the previous weekend. So clearly, from that point onwards, the second half was immaterial. But that one, the Reds then got a yellow card, and they got a line out more, which also the conversion was missed. Those two conversions, and suddenly it's 28 all with 10 minutes to go, and it really is anyone's game. So, yeah, they are nearly there, as you say, against one of the better Australian sides.
I think what really hurt them was the loss of Ian Pryor as well. So he went off injured and Abel come on to replace him. I think they really lost a lot defensively, structurally, around how they line up and how they defend, but more so on attack. He really does spark that team massively. His experience, just knowing how to direct and guide, you know, that link between the pack and the backs, like we talk about each and every week. He is a massive, massive part of the team. We knew he was, but I think we really found out just how big of a deal he was. That put more pressure on Jono Lance outside him as well. And yeah, you're right. They were right in that game pretty much all the way through till the very, very end as well. So given that, given the circumstances, losing one of their key men in that sort of link-up position, that real importance position at nine, I think they could definitely come out of 2 weeks of this competition saying they have a chance to really compete. And I think, you know, sooner or later, they're going to win a game.
Yep. Alshin, what did you think of John O'Connor's idea to do a drop goal at the end there? It kept the game alive, but it did stretch their lead just a little bit, didn't it?
Look, I was going to say.
Rolling back the clock.
we're talking about friend of the show. Well, it's an interesting option to take. I'm not sure. I was like, it's still learning the rules and the how the game's actually taking place with that Aussie competition for me. I won't comment on it too much, to tell you the truth, because I'm still sort of learning the ins and outs of what's the way to go on there.
Yeah, and those I do think those the 22-50 and the 50-22, in particular the 50-22, is more of a game changer than the rules we've seen introduced in the New Zealand conference, the New Zealand competition. It can really change momentum very, very quickly in that point, from that point of view. And with that, the Force losing four of their lineouts didn't help themselves at the weekend on Friday night either. So that was a disappointment. But again, loving the back rows of in this game. There's some real young talent bashing around in that Super Rugby AU that just needs a bit of time to mature, Steve.
Oh, well, you talk about the back row is great young talent as well. And it's great that the Western Force have come through here with three, I guess, by, you know, the Super Rugby standards, relatively unknown sort of guys. And they've really stood up. Stiles, Ferris and Stander have been brilliant for that team. And I mean, we've seen it, haven't we, through this whole competition with Aotearoa and now with AU, that those big ball-carrying back rowers that just like to go out and hurt people are so impactful now in this day and age of the game. So, you know, the old sort of Hooper Pocock days, you know, I don't know if they'll be too much of a survivor in this sort of rugby that we're seeing now this year. But on the other side, the Reds, I think it's been mentioned in the chat already, but Tate McDermott, he's just phenomenal. He's out of this world. And I think I agree 100% that he's going to be a future Wallaby as well, long-term stay if he can keep this sort of form up as well. So heaps of real talent in there. I'm still liking the way the Reds play. Chris Fiawe-Sortia was amazing as well for the Reds. A real danger on attack. Every time he got the ball, he was busting tackles, getting nicely over the advantage line. And you can't go past, you know, Wright, McWright. Those two guys, similar names, they both play fantastically. And Lucan Solakai-Loto was another guy I thought had an amazing, he's like another back rower. So he plays in the second row. He's a great exponent at the line out, but he hurts people and gets over the game line just like a back rower does in this current game. So really good for them to have, you know, Tupou as well, another guy, Pango Amosa, another guy who really gets you going forward with ball in hand. So you've got, you know, six out of eight who you can rely on to say, here you go, have a shot at this. Bang, they're going to get you go forward ball. If you can quickly get it out through Tate McDermott, you know, he's going to fire the pass. O'Connor loves to run. If they're in good conditions here, the Reds, and they get a little bit of a roll on, they're going to be a hard team to stop because they've got talent throughout. They've got finishes on the outside, and they've got guys that can create, and they can maneuver themselves around this back line. So they're exciting. And I really like the way the Reds play when they get their game sorted out. They can be a bit wishy-washy, but I think when they're on song, they are definitely one team to watch this season as well. On the Force, though, yeah, we've talked a lot about them, but I thought Marcel Braki was a guy I did want to mention. Amazing on attack. Such a liability on defence in this game. It was really good to see. He was great. He broke the line a lot of times. Good passing. Found his outside player. He was a good presence. He picked up loose balls. He was quite good. But then defensively, he got bumped off a lot. So a bit of a good, bad game from Marcel Braki. But ever-present, I think. And the Force need that to go forward. They need someone who's going to take that line on and make half breaks and create room for those guys outside. Because we know Byron Rolston is a guy who can finish. He's a try-scoring machine. That intercept try, you know, 90-meter sprint was just glorious. It was shades of the old Nick Cummins, wasn't it? We saw those flashbacks of the old Honey Badger going for the scamper intercept from 90 meters away. So, yeah, it's good for the Force, and it's good that they're competing. And like I say, they were in that game for, you know, most part, right to the end, and they could have actually won that game had things gone their way like it did for a couple of other sides this weekend.
Yeah, I was listening to the Red, White and Black Eye, the American Rugby podcast, and they were talking about how Marcel Braki, for as far as they're concerned, is a winger, not a centre. So they were thinking like, oh, wow, look, he's been brought in. And as you say, he's got found out defensively. Yeah, he is a winger. He's not a 13. And 13 can be one of the hardest places to defend, especially when there were times when it was just James O'Connor was like, just give me the ball and I'll create something. Give me four runners outside of me and I'll pick out the one that's going to hit the gap. Because the number of missed passes he was throwing and that kind of thing was once things got flowing was really cool. The comment there earlier about, yes, the idea of the 50-22 is to try and pull those defenders back, those wingers back. But what it does mean is if a team gets out of shape and forgets that a player hasn't gone back, and we saw that particularly on Saturday night, I think it was. It was actually today during the Chiefs game when the winger was yellow carded. But that just means, yeah, that you can suddenly flip things if a team gets themselves out of shape. Shape becomes a big thing defensively around that. Connor Wilson says, what about Ethan de Groot making his debut? Well, yes. I mean, from a name point of view, fantastic. We've got Groot in there, which is great.
Baby Groot, or is he the full grown Groot?
Full grown Groot.
He's a pretty big lad. I'll give you that much. He's a pretty big fella.
So he's a full grown Groot. James O'Connor, though. I mean, like, is he therefore at the moment, like, with the style of game that he's playing and looking to put the, you know, picking his players and running the game so well for the Reds, is he the number one first five in the Australian competition?
No.
Nah. Not a chance. I mean, he's good. He's not a 10, but I mean, I think we found out pretty quickly from the Reds where they've played that he's not, you know, he's not a wet weather rugby player. And I think that goes for the whole team. Put Damien McKenzie in at 10, same sort of situation there, but I mean, they've got too much talent, in the likes of Lolasio and Harrison, although Lolasio is injured, now, but yeah, they've got too much talent and young guys coming through. We'll give O'Connor a pass. There's too much other stuff going on.
If you got front football and you got some runners outside him, he looks really good. If you ask him to pick your team around the pitch and to get yourself out of trouble, he can be a bit hit and miss.
And he's fixated on kicking 50-22s as well, which, I mean, if that's not an international rugby, he's going to have no objective, is he? That's just his thing.
Yep.
He finally got one too.
Who knows what laws we'll be playing under when international rugby does resume there. So, be strong, showing you some love there, Steve, in the live chat about the – we'll get on to the Highlanders later for that one. So then one of the things that you were one of the things that you were talking about for the weekend was, look, don't play your games, Australia, after a New Zealand game. Because Friday night, Hurricanes versus the Blues, another game that went right down to the wire. And another game that I thought, hey, the Blues have got this in the bag, only for the Hurricanes to come back. I mean, the 15-all at halftime, that required a minute. That required a score after the Hooter had gone to get the Hurricanes back into it, and then just after the hour mark, the Blues get themselves back in charge. And I think one of the things I did say about this game was that I tweeted out half time was, look, this game is going to be decided by line out mauls. And Archwin, that was a big part of this game, wasn't it?
Oh, look, that's basically, apart from Bowden Barrett making that break for the first try that the Blues scored, that's all the Blues really had was the line-out drive. So it was the kick into the corner and the drive. And in fact, that first kick is funny. It's like listening to the commentators on Saturday night was quite crack-ups. Because it's like, could you show that you're from Wellington anymore? This is like the Blues scored a try from a Bowden Barrett kick into the corner, which was a banana kick. And there was no comment on the kick whatsoever. Jordy Barrett kicks one into the corner. And it was like, oh, my God, this is the best thing since sliced bread. This guy is an amazing player. And this is like, okay, this is the caliber of the commentating we're getting tonight. But, no, look, it was apart from, I think, Laumapi's first try when he sort of outsped, great English there, outsped Bodie Barrett on the outside. Everybody's all the other tries were from rolling mauls, weren't they?
The 1, 2, 3, 4. At least five of the 8 tries were definitely from rolling mauls. A lot of rolling mauls, a lot of driving mauls were involved. Not rolling mauls. Rolling mauls. What a bad name.
My bad, Skipper.
Everyone was waxing lyrical about how fast Laumapi was for that first try.
Yes.
Now he steps Barrett. He obviously puts Barrett on his heels and sends him the wrong way. But then Barrett's got to turn around and chase him. Yes, he was quick, but I don't think he was as quick as everyone was waxing lyrical. Or am I just being a...
No, he was. He's burnt him. He hasn't just put him back on his heel. He burnt him. He went around the outside and he burnt him. It wasn't... Yeah, and even like after his turn, he didn't make any dent and that gap was getting bigger. Yeah, he had to turn, but players turn all the time these days. And it wasn't a 180 turn. It was sort of a curve of a turn. Nah, he burnt him.
What's up with Lamarpe? What someone said to Lamarpe recently? What's the big thing here? Because if you've seen that post-match interview he did, he's got some serious business against someone that he wants to prove a point against, and I love it. I mean, whoever it is, say it more, because he was insane over that matchup. If someone insulted something about him, or I don't know what it is, but he needs that fire. If he's got that fire, he is one of the best players around.
So Lamarpe is classic. You watch next week against the Crusaders, he won't have that game. He won't have that.
I know. That's what I'm worried about.
Yep. He will have that game against the Blues every time. Every time he's come up against the Blues, that's how he plays. When the Blues actually beat them up at Eden Park, he had that game. He was phenomenal. He was the one that gave the Hurricanes go forward in that game as well. It was like Julian Sevier when he played for the Canes against the Blues. He'd have this phenomenal game against the Blues. They always do. They lift against the Blues. And then next week they're playing this opposition and they're like, where'd that game go? So, and that's it. And you'll see that from Lamarpe.
He does against the Highlanders too. I remember last year that he actually scored those. You know, the Highlanders were in head by pretty much like the Chiefs were tonight. And Lamarpe scored 3 tries, I think it was, just completely single-handedly destroyed the Highlanders. So, I mean, it's not just the Blues he has against it, but I do agree he's pretty hot and cold. When he goes, he goes. And other than that, he can be very invisible as well.
So his B in his bonnet. He's not an All Black then. Is it because of his...
His B in his bonnet is against the All Black selectors. Because he got left out for the World Cup. And it's just like, I think, you know, us couch selectors, most of us couch selectors had him in the World Cup squad simply for the fact that he gave a point of difference in the attack. And when we got to the World Cup, all of our midfielders were the same and we had no point of difference. And that showed up big time against that England defeat.
Hmm. Now, for me also, I think Lamarpe plays a different style for the Hurricanes than the All Blacks are looking for their centres, their 12 to do. He spends an awful lot of his time appearing on the wing. Whereas if you think about an All Blacks game, how often did you see a Sonny Bill Williams or a Ryan Crotty appear on the wing?
I sort of agree with you, but I also disagree with you. What I think is that, he pops up on the wing. He pops up where there's space that gives him the time to wind up the wheels. So it wasn't always that it was on the wing. It's like he will do that in midfield as well, but he will put himself inside or outside where that space is that he can get the ball and wind up. And he's putting himself, and the good thing is for him as a player, is he's getting himself into positions to allow him to do that and give his team go forward, which is great, because what's the point in just staying in your position where you've got your defense on you? You know what your skill and your strength is and what you can deliver for your team. Put yourself in the position to deliver that.
Yeah, I think that movement around the park and not being and I think they want that the sort of get out of jail guy next to the 10 or next to the first receiver, and the way that he is on the way he goes and finds space so he can wind up, I don't think he's actually what the All Blacks are looking for. It's fantastic, don't get me wrong. I just don't think it fits with the All Blacks' game plan.
I think that's where the All Blacks, and, you know, I'm sorry, but England's a fantastic, that game against England's a fantastic example of it. They had one game plan, one game plan only. If you have a Lamarpe in your squad, it gives you the option of doing something different. In that game against England in the World Cup, they had nobody that could change the game plan, the style that they were playing. They had one game plan and only. If you had a Lamarpe, you could say, okay, let's free him. Let's free those reins a bit and let him roam around a bit to try and find that space and gaps and get go forward, which is what he's doing for the Hurricanes.
And it's what England did, is what I think the Hurricanes did to the Blues as well, because they had that big man advantage. And I talked about in the preview quite significantly, I thought this was a massive factor in this game, was that you look through that Blues backline and there's nowhere to hide for all these guys who are fairly small. The only one that could probably represent himself fairly comfortably in size sort of stakes would be Rico Ioane, who can't take out Lamarpe, Lamb, Umanga, Jensen, Van Vyck, who's a fairly big guy. And to be fair, so is Jordy Barrett. You've got pretty much a big back line up against a little back line. big back line just wants to play bulldozer. Little back line has no real alternative. They had no backup. They needed like that Fiani in there from the get-go to help Rico defensively to shut that down.
In the last couple of weeks, actually, management team have actually made a couple of errors in team selection for my mind. And, you know, Plummer actually didn't come off too badly against the Crusaders. He actually, you know, not too bad. But Braden Enor and Jack Goodhue running at you is not Lani Mamapi or Billy Proctor running at you. Matt Proctor, sorry. Was it Matt or Billy? Anyway, a Proctor. Or Umanga Jensen. Or Umanga Jensen, sorry. It was actually when I finally get it right. It's not them running at you. So, Plummer had a job against the Crusaders. He did not bad job of it. He was not the player to play against the Hurricanes with Laumapi running on him. And they finally saw that and they brought TJ on. And there was a difference there in the defensive lineup once TJ came on.
And Plummer had a shocker early on. I mean, he missed a couple of tackles. He was getting he was misaligned. He got in the way of a player, course crossing as well. Yeah, he just had a bad night.
What were we expecting? I mean, we knew that was coming. We know what Laumapi does. You need to have your strongest defensive lineup against them. And the thing is that by having TJ, you're not actually losing a hell of a lot by in your attack either by having TJ there. Because the other thing is that effectively the Blues kicking hasn't, even though we've been, I mean, like the last two games aside, even in the when they've had their run of seven games or whatever it was, the kicking for field position has been a bit hot and cold. So, and like they haven't really used the boot when they've gone with a Terry Black, Harry Plummer, and then Bodie at the back. The kicking for territory and kicking for position was non-existent. Like when you're talking about when they finally took the lead, why wouldn't you plug the corners? Because the Hurricanes weren't going to score tries from their own 22. You know, they were getting some good go forward in that last 15 minutes, but they were not going to score a try from their own 22.
So Alex says, I think Carson was meant to be 12 before the injury. I hope not. If they'd had Dan Carter at 12.
Carter was going to be 12 before the injury.
Pardon?
Carter was going to be 12 before the injury, calf strain. Or
okay, I think that's a bad call. I don't think Laumapi against Carter is not going to be a fun ending. Let's be blunt. To be fair, look, the Hurricanes should not have come down to Bowden Barrett missing a conversion and the Hurricanes and Jordy Barrett making a conversion, okay? 14 clean breaks by the Hurricanes to only two by the Blues.
Yep.
The Hurricanes had to make 78 made 78 tackles. The Blues made 176 tackles, nearly 100 more. The Hurricanes should have run away with this game.
That's why as a Blue supporter, I wasn't actually. I mean, it's you know, anytime you lose, it's disappointing. But I wasn't too gutted because there was no energy from the Blues in that game whatsoever. And Patrick Tupolota said exactly that in the post-match interview as well. It was from the start, there was about, in the first 20 minutes, there was four occasions where it was like a Barbarian squad that coming together because the pass went to a player's face. Or, you know, they were standing there and they weren't even ready to catch the ball. And it's just like, oh my God, what is going on with these guys today? There was no energy from the team. So, again, with the great commentary that we got from the Sky team on Saturday night, there was no mention of the fact that the Blues didn't have any ball in that first half. 20%, 27%, I think, was the number of the percentage of possession that they had in that first half. That's nothing. You know, you can't survive on that. And they were 15 all at halftime. So, look, you can see that. Look, if they get the energy levels back up, and then they'll be back again, get the train back on the rails.
Yeah. So 32% possession, 22% territory. So even when they had the ball, it was in their own half most of the time as well. So yeah, it was a real tough. And the second half didn't get much better. 38% and 37%. So slight improvement, but still not what's. If you're playing badly and you win, or you're playing badly and you get that close, that's actually a good sign.
That's a good sign. That's it. I mean, at the end of the day, they were basically, as I said, it came down to the fact that there was, you know, they had a patch of energy around that 60-minute mark, and they converted some points. But really, I said to Aiden, my son, when we're watching the game, it's just like, you know, in that last 15, it's like Hurricanes are going to score. They'll score because there was that patch around that 50 from the third quarter, let's call it, that the Blues defensive line was really strong and the Hurricanes weren't going anywhere. And all of a sudden, after they scored their try to go ahead, the defense became sort of passive, and the Hurricanes were actually making meters, whether it's 1 or 2, 3 meters, but they're going forward. They're getting going forward. From each ruck, you go 2, 3 meters. You know, these days you're doing big ruck count numbers right in a row, 8, 10, 14. You do 3 meters at a time, you're going forward a long way. And that's where the defense in the last 20 was really passive.
I think the Blues have suffered a bit like the Highlanders did the week before. That game against the Crusaders, you come off it. It's such a mental killer because you throw everything you've got into that. They, like the Blues threw into that. They competed really, really well. They pushed the Crusaders to that brink of that next level, but they ultimately come away with nothing. And I mean, and you come away with that.
You're deflated from it.
Exactly. And I think that the Highlanders suffered from that massively, not only because they come away with nothing, but they also got thumped that it looked like they weren't even in that match at the end as well. And they went into that next game that killed their confidence. And I think the Blues have suffered a bit from the same. They've been on a high, and it's kind of weird to say it, but I think the Blues had almost got used to winning because they've won all the games so far, and they're almost like, this winning stuff's not bad. We can get used to this. We can keep on. We've got confidence. We're going to take out the Crusaders. They had that belief. And then it got just taken out from underneath them, and the cards come crashing down very, very quickly. So I think that has a huge part to play in what happened this weekend. Whereas the Hurricanes, on the other hand, I think have been getting increasingly better and better and better since the start of their season. Jordy Barrett's made a massive difference to that team, and they've just got increasingly better. And the belief in them is going up and up and up. And they didn't have that down. That down's going to come for the Hurricanes. Believe you me, that's going to come sooner or later. But at that point in this match, that was a big difference.
You'd have to say, though, as a Hurricanes, you know, the Hurricanes team, with the stats that Paul just presented before, you know, they should have won that by a big margin, really. And the fact that they didn't still be a bit of a concern. They're like, hang on, you've hit a Blues on the side of a down, but you couldn't put them away. That'd be a bit of concern for me, for them.
I think if I was going to pinpoint the Blues, I think there's a couple of players that really have really good games. And it's the young man who I had questions about at the start, Imoni Narawa. I thought he was defensively covering back, probably saved at least 2 or 3 Hurricanes tries, especially that Lamapu when he went straight over top of Barrett, just completely squashed him. It was a most pathetic tackle I've ever seen Barrett do. But he covered back and dragged them down a meter or two short. That was probably the most notable occasion, but there was 2 or 3 times right on their own line where he was a massive defensive cover that saved them from conceding. Defensively, one-on-one up in the line, not so much of an impact, but yeah, covering back, I thought he really, really did really well. The yellow card obviously counted against him a lot, but I think, you know, for a new guy, for a young guy, he did very, very good job. And Finley Christie.
Finley Christie
is just phenomenal. The sparks, electric.
Yeah, he's electric.
9 seconds off for that sort of thing are becoming so, so vital. And you know, when a team doesn't have a guy that can add that spark off the back of the pack, it just isn't the same. Brad Weber normally brings that spark. He's really struggled to get that spark, and his back line fails to really build off from him. And you see that with Christie. I think he really brings a lot to that Blues team. And he is definitely one of the best, you know, number nines going around, especially in Auckland. You don't see those other guys don't add anything there. Jamie Booth is another one for the Canes off the bench. I really, really like Jamie Booth. It sucks when he comes on that TJ has to move to 10. But aside from that, Jamie Booth really, really does bring on a lot of spark. They just need to bring on another 10. Take TJ off. Just take him off. He admits himself after the match that he doesn't really get the grasp of the number 10 role. It helps him understand his role. But, I mean, do that in practice matches. Goodness me. When it's big crunch time like that, no chance.
Yeah. And look, I mean, Finley Christie, absolutely 100% agree with you. I've been waiting for him once he was in the squad for him to come on. And unfortunately, he got injured. Even in the early proper Super Rugby rounds. And it's just like, so frustrating. And then Sam Knox developed so well. And then so to have Ruru coming off the bench is a hard one to take. Because unfortunately, I mean, like when we sit in the West End, we can see from Ruru's game where he struggles is that he takes too long to make decisions. So it's just split second. It's not long, but it makes a massive difference in getting your team to go forward. And you see it in Ruru's game. He's just that little bit, that split second too slow to deliver. And Finley Christie's just a firecracker and is just going all the time. And I'm almost sort of thinking, don't sub him. You only sub him if he gets injured. He goes the 80 until Sam Knott comes back. And then you can to me, Finley Christie's still the number one halfback in the squad, and Sam Knott's on the bench. and a good cover on the bench.
Yep.
So yes, Geordie better than ten than TJ. Yes, and you see Geordie at first receiver a lot during that game. So yes, absolutely. Couple of questions out of here. Then let's go with first of the nocturnal rights one. From a player point of view, is Fifita out of the running for All Black selection? Got 13 minutes this week. For me, Fifita is a six. He's not a lock. Unless he's going to get time at six, yes, he's out of All Black. He's out of that selection because
I don't think he's got
a decent couple of sixes running around at the moment.
Yeah, I don't think he's even in consideration, to tell you the truth. I think he's injuries away from playing, not being as part of the first thought of being a six.
Talking of players who are going to be in. Oh, sorry. Go on, Stephen.
No, I was just going to say I agree with Ashton on that one. I don't think he was probably one of the ones considered for it. But just on the Geordie Barrett sort of side of things, I mean, he's already playing 10, isn't he? I mean, he's kind of playing 10 and a half. He's always pretty much there. So, I mean,
the ball, makes sense. The ball's going to him. It's not really going to Jackson Garden Bishop, is it? It's really when it's going to Garden Bishop, it's really just for a clearing kick or something like that. Geordie's in a ruck. Yeah. It's just like when the play's happening, when something's on, it's Geordie taking the ball and doing something, making a decision.
Frizzella's obviously is a great six. We've had the injured guy at the Crusaders. I've just gone blank. Carroll?
Cullen Grace, thank you.
And Dolce Papalihi can play six or seven as well. He's having a great time of it. So, yes, a lot of players who are doing well. We'll get on to Sam Kane when we talk about the Chiefs. We're not talking about the Chiefs yet. But Daz asks us, Paul, do you think, he's asking me, boys, not you. So, wait for a second. Paul, do you think or can the Blues or Hurricanes make a comeback? Yeah, look, the Crusaders have got 1.5 hands on it already. They've got 18 points. They're 5 points clear of the Blues. They've got an extra game to play. The Blues have played 5 games, the Crusaders 4. To me, look, it's the Crusaders' competition to lose at this point. They've basically got it, haven't they, boys?
Yeah, basically, I think their next game, which is the Crusaders-Hurricanes, will be, if the Hurricanes can't tip them over and then that's basically it's all over, I feel.
Give them the trophy now.
Yeah.
Highlands is the second.
The other thing I also said, sure. I'm just saying, yeah. The Hurricanes, I mean, we've sort of said they actually were playing at peak yesterday and they'll be disappointed with the fact that they didn't score extra points. They can prove us wrong next week, obviously, and whether they can tip over the Crusaders. Look, I think although the Crusaders, as I said, have got a 1.5 hands on that trophy, they are still, it's any of these teams, if they don't turn up, will get beaten. So the Crusaders still have to turn up. That's the thing that they've got. That's what they've got in spades, is they always turn up. And they turn up week after week after week, and for 80 minutes, generally speaking. But if they don't turn up, then any one of the, even the Chiefs, could beat them. That's a big statement. But what else is it? But the thing is, when's the last time the Crusaders didn't turn up? For 80 minutes.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, that's the thing. But if they don't,
a long time.
Yeah.
Okay, so we followed that one up with an Australian game, as Cornflame sort of mentioned. Waratahs, Brumbies. Now look, this one again, 1-point game down to the final moments. Actually, a decent game, Steve. It wasn't that bad, was it?
It was a bit of a surprise, wasn't it? It was a bit of a shock to the old system. I think I wasn't expecting the Waratahs to actually bring anything to this game whatsoever. But where's this come from? The Brumbies, I'm not sure if they've got worse at their sort of forward play or set piece defence against teams, or other teams actually got a bit of gusto now and a bit of belief in themselves that they can actually take the Brumbies on. Because we've seen the Rebels do it. The Waratahs did it quite comfortably. They're actually getting over the Brumbies when it comes to the forward play as well. So, yeah, this was not what I was expecting at all. I think the Waratahs played, you'd probably say, the game of their lives in that matchup against the Brumbies. Weren't expected to do well at all. They came, they scored points, they had standout guys throughout that team, and they made the Brumbies really, really struggle and really work for what they got. But sadly, like we've spoken about so many times in this review tonight already, they just couldn't play that full 80 minutes. And that was the big, big difference at the end. They, you know, 81 minutes, 82 minutes, it doesn't matter. When the games are that close, which they always seem to be, you've got to go on. But hey, it was good. Good weather. They were running. There was breaks. There was tries. And it was exciting. And it was close as well. And I think, you know, that's where Australian Super Rugby has kind of fallen away a little bit, because the games haven't really got that absorbing sort of atmosphere. And maybe that's to do with the crowd numbers, because you do notice in the New Zealand games, it really has a great atmosphere because there is decent crowd numbers there. There's the boos for Bowden. There's the cheers for the Chiefs, even though they're losing. So it's got that atmosphere, and it drags you in. It really drags you into the game as well, because you get involved with it. It just kind of lacks that in Australia. And I think it's a bit of a shame, because that, I think, was a really, really cracking game.
Yeah, look, part of that is down to social distancing, folks, over there. It's not because people aren't turning up. Okay, it's they're not allowed to have people in the stadiums. Let's just give them a little bit of a little bit of credit there. But yeah, you've got to say, I mean, this Brumbies team, famed for having a good set piece, particularly a line-out maul, went on to lose 8 line-outs in this game. 14 successful out of 22. If you're giving up that much platform, you're going to be in trouble. Add into that the 16 turnovers they conceded, and you're like, wow, how did they come up with this and win this game?
Now, yeah, but that's the thing. This is like, the Waratahs got to be disappointed. And you know, I mean, like, I have to say, I was channel surfing between 3TC and the rugby game. And the thing was that you sort of thought, watching the game, it's like, oh, the Waratahs got this in the bag. So you can understand why Michael Hooper was sort of had to run off and grab Teddy and have a cry, because, like, geez, you've got to be so disappointed if you're the Waratahs and you lost that game. Sorry, Hugh.
Yeah, there was also a controversial reffing decision. I think about 2 rucks before the end, he thought he had a legitimate turnover. So one of the reasons he ran down the tunnel was, look, don't put a microphone in my face and don't let me get anywhere near the referee, because it's not going to end well. So quite rightly,
he got himself
out of the way. So clever guy. Hooper, clever guy. Doesn't always have good referee management skills at the best of times. So, not surprised by that one.
But I mean, like, you look at it and it's just like, you look at those stats that you just said, how did the Brumbies stay in the game?
Yeah. Now they had all the running. They ran the ball a lot better. They made the Tars make a lot more tackles. But still, to give away the ball that much, to have your line out that dysfunctional, when everyone knows that the Brumbies score a lot of tries off their line out more. It is really amazing. They jumped out to a good. They got the early score. The Tars came back. The yellow card to Muirhead was a real killer, because during that time, the Tars got two scores in, at that time the Brumbies were getting killed on the penalty count. They managed to come back, make it a 1-score game at halftime, but still the Tars pulled it out again, and then basically just tried to shut the game down. And that wasn't going to be, it wasn't the way to do it. They just said, right, Tars, Brumbies, if you're going to score, you're going to score from a long way. We're going to kick it to you back into your 22. Good luck. The Brumbies were actually running the ball pretty well, and managed to come back. Yes, a couple of comments in the live chat there. Yes, we do all love to be selectors. We'd be much better than Grant Fox at selecting teams. So yeah.
Well, definitely Ian Foster.
Pick me. Well, no, Grant Fox is the, look, I'm not about to say I can necessarily coach better than the coaches, but I can select better than somebody. So yes. <that's> And Ian Foster is just Grant Fox, I think, is just a selector, isn't he? He doesn't actually do any coaching. So that's the job for me. So there we go. So amazing that one. With those ones. I think Ram is one of the players that's been actually impressing me over the last couple of weekends for the Tars. He seems to sort of get himself involved quite nicely. in there, and for Muirhead, who got the yellow card, to also get man of the match, that's unusual, to say the very least.
I mean, so, the Brumbies, you look at the Brumbies team, I think there's one has been mentioned in the chat as well about the injury to Noah Lulisio. I think was quite a big turning point in this game, because he is quite a pivotal guy in that side, just like Will Harrison is for the Waratahs. But there's a couple of key guys that I want to give a bit of a shout out for, and it was his replacement in the Brumbies, Bailey Kunzel, who I thought had a really, really strong game. Started off really shaky, missed that kick. Took a couple of pretty bad tackles in his first touches, but after that, got a bit of confidence, got a bit of time on the ball. He actually looked really, really good. Strong runner, beat tackles. He's a big lad as well, and he's another one of these under 20 guys from Australia who are coming through the ranks as well. So it's the first time we've really seen him. I think he might have played a couple of reserve appearances off the bench, but this was some big, big minutes of Andrew Lolasio, and I suppose if he's going to be up for a while, we're probably going to see some more of Kunzel in this team later on as well. But for the Waratahs, I think a big, big difference they made for them in this game was Carmichael Hunt being back in this team at 12, because he takes so much of that pressure off Will Harrison and allows him to play more of his game. We seen it off the bench last weekend. Carmichael Hunt takes on the line, he kicks, he kind of does old school sort of 12 stuff. And he's a strong carrier as well. So he adds a lot to that team and adds a lot of that experience as well. Because, you know, Joey Walton was a bit struggling. He's looked a lot better with Hunt inside him as well. And he's talked about James Ram. Yeah, he's looked really, really good as well. So it's kind of picked up this whole back line, having that kind of guy who has a responsibility to throw that team on his shoulders and drive them forward and pick them up a little bit has made a big difference to that side. So there's a lot of positives I think the Waratahs can take from this, but it's not the first week I'm going to say this about the Brumbies. They've won the game, but they'll be disappointed. It's a continuing thing with them. They'll be stoked they've won it, sure, but they have not played the best. I don't think we've seen like more than a 60% Brumbies this season at all. Sure, they've had the bye, but they've, you know, their two games so far, they've won them. They probably shouldn't have. And they had to dig really, really deep, go into their shell like a turtle and go back to, you know, just trying to shut a team out by playing, you know, that slow sort of Brumby style of play. They've tried to be a bit more expansive. It's backfired on them. And they've had to go back and just try and shut a game down a little bit. So it's interesting. I mean, the Brumbies were by far away the favourites.
They've had to go back to kicking the ball into the corner and driving more up to the try line. But you do what works for you. Hey, what about George Gregan's mini-me at the back of the scrum?
Well, the one that just scored the try, Isaac Fiennes. Yeah. He's got hair. What are you talking about? Well,
no. George had hair when he started.
And that was a great try, wasn't it? I mean, it was Damien McKenzie. He scored it sideways, dancing around the tacklers, and then, oh, two props. Thank you. I'll take that. And he's gone.
It was a fantastic try, and it's just like I just sort of thought, oh my god, this is like so George Gregan.
Yeah, don't worry about the rest of the team.
Right, Chiefs versus Highlanders. Then
when now, was that?
Sorry, when was that? Now, I went to the opening game or the first Chiefs home game because someone gave me a free ticket, which was nice. And it was raining, and it was pretty full. Where I was sat in, if I'd sat in that same seat today, I wouldn't have had anybody within about 20 seats of me. So, yeah, the crowds really have dropped off quite dramatically.
Yep. Okay, so if you actually analyze the crowds and we take the patriotism out of it, all that sort of parochialism out of it, the big crowds are where the Blues are played. The big numbers are where the Blues have gone. So what's happened is that, the Chiefs game was against the Blues, if I remember rightly, was it?
Yeah, it was against the Blues,
And it was like, it was pouring down. So two factors there. Again, it's the Blues are actually on the rise. We better go support the team and can't, you know. And the other thing is it's down the motorway. So you had a lot of people from Auckland drove down and bought a lot of tickets, obviously with the Blues doing well as well. And let's look at it. And to back that theory up, you look at the Crusaders. The Crusaders haven't actually had a decent crowd until they had a sellout against the Blues.
And I think the Crusaders are going to win, right? Against the Blues, it was like, oh,
there's a challenge.
I knew they were going to win, but it's like, oh, they're going to be challenged this time. This is going to be an interesting game.
Well, there's two factors there, right? I mean, obviously, it's for somebody in the village of the damned, it's the spawn of the devil coming down, and so you know we have to we better come in there and support the team. So, that's another factor to it too. So there's a lot more goes into it with an Auckland team on the rise or a Blues team on the rise.
Yeah. So the I think also at the beginning of the competition, you've got people who've been locked up for 3 months and suddenly, hey, I can actually go to something as well.
Don't disagree with you, Paul.
Don't agree with me?
Don't disagree with you. You go with that first round. You go with that first round when there was a sellout, effectively a sellout at Eden Park. And, big talk about the I can't remember, who were the Highlanders playing in that first round, Steve? Chiefs. Yeah, it was the Chiefs.
Yeah.
And there was a big talk about the fact that, oh, there was going to be a sellout at the Tupperware container. And there was like, hey, the zoo wasn't full even, and definitely that was, I think it was less than 20,000 there at the stadium sort of thing. So when you actually analyze, there's been a lot of hype and a lot of commentary around big numbers and lots of people going to the games. When you analyze it, there's been specific games which have had a good turnout or a great turnout, but the reality is that the numbers actually aren't a hell of a lot different. Yeah, they've been a little bit higher, but not astronomically higher.
It's talking about 20,000 people not being a good crowd for the Highlanders.
We've just talked. We just come out of lockdown where we haven't been able to do anything, and it's like we're talking about a 30,000+ seats. You know, if they got to sellout, they could have put the seats.
30.
But you can put seats at the other end of the stadium. Let's not forget they don't put the seats in at the other end of the stadium. But it's just like you've been in lockdown. Auckland, Eden Park sold out. Mainly, one of the reasons was that is that finally we can get out and do something. Also, a bonus for the Blues is the Warriors aren't playing in town, so you haven't got competition on that front as well. But
people go see
the fact is that people a chance to come out and do something. And 20,000, it's just like, you know, the talk went down pretty quickly after ticket sales from the south, and for that first game, I was expecting honestly when I heard that when everybody's talking up the ticket sales, I was expecting to see something close to capacity for Forsyth Barr.
I think well, you've got 20% of the expecting a little bit too much from down there. I think it was still a much better crowd than they normally get.
Whoa. See, this is the thing. We're becoming apologetic because the fact is that you go back to Carisbrook. Carisbrook was a 35,000-40,000 seat stadium. So the people are there. You can't say to me that the population shrunk from when Carisbrook was there to when Forsyth Barr is there.
No, I get that. Yeah, look, if we roll back, every single NPC game was a sellout and packed and wonderful, blah 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 blah. But I still think it was a significant uptick on what they've been doing recently. Could they have done better? Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's my point, Paul. That's my point. It's like, yeah, it's great. We've got more numbers coming, but it's not like, oh my god, this is fantastic. We don't know what to do with ourselves. We're gonna be rolling in cash.
The oh no, it's not. Look, they're not really rolling in cash, but I think there's been a round by round decrease, and I noticed a significant difference there at the Chiefs this tonight. For a 3 o'clock kickoff where it's sunny, it should have been better.
It was a pearler of a day down there, wasn't it?
Pardon? Oh, it was lovely. It's great, lovely day. I was down in Rotorua Road, but and had to drive back, but yeah, it was still nice. But apart from the Blues Crusaders game, the last game of the round, if the Blues are still competitive, I think look that could be a good sellout. But I think the rest of them are going to be heading back towards essentially what we had pre-COVID. And I think that what that tells you guys is look, Super Rugby, New Zealand Rugby, they're not doing anything different at the games than they were pre-COVID. So why do you think you're going to be able to maintain crowd numbers? When I went to that Chiefs game, and one of the things I was trying to be positive, so I didn't mention it at the time. Only one of the two big screens actually was turned on. The second big screen wasn't even turned on. You're like, seriously? Wow. So cost saving measure there that they've kept one of the big screens turned off. Yeah. So school holidays might have been a bit of a factor, but it shouldn't have been really for this one.
Yeah. Last day of the school holidays as well, so you start to go back home as well. So, yeah.
Oh, thank God for that. Hey, you got to remember Dunedin relies on a lot of people outside of the region of Dunedin or the city of Dunedin to actually get to its crowds.
Mosgiel.
Now, remember what summer season it is. I can tell you right now that there is ice sitting on my driveway, and I'm not going to be driving back from Dunedin for 2.5 hours on ice at 11 o'clock at night after a game, or 10 o'clock at night. So, I mean, there's no people from Central Otago coming across. There's no people from Southland barely going up to those games, which that's a decent normal supporter number of people. Give us give us afternoon games. Go on.
But we've got global warming. So what's changed from when Carisbrook was getting filled up?
Enough.
People just slept on the side of the road back then and got drunk. That's why. A bit more sensible.
Move on. They used to burn the couch while they were sat on it to keep warm back in the day.
Had defrosted the ice. Frozen couch on the bumper.
Let's go on to the game.
Deary me. Behind us. That came out today. So Chiefs jumped out to a 24-0 lead in this one. And I'm thinking, my money's safe. This is good. This is they're totally in control. Thompson really is out of form. Another shocking day for him, really, in that 13 jersey. You've got to wonder how much longer he's going to keep that jersey, to be honest. He had a poor day. And then basically the wheels fell off, didn't they, in that second half for the Chiefs? I mean, Ashwin's been ranting, so we'll go with Cornflake as to what happened. Why did the wheels fall off the Chiefs?
Well, see, I only wrote notes about what happened to the Highlanders because there's only one team in this game, and then there was the Highlanders all from start to finish. I'll tell you what happened to the Chiefs. The Highlanders actually started to catch the ball. The Highlanders actually started to finish their chances. The Highlanders actually started to string together some phases. The Highlanders subbed on Josh Iwani. The Highlanders started Josh McKay. That's the big difference. And Aaron Smith decided he wanted to play in the last half as well. The Chiefs were just shut out. I mean, they were relying on knock-ons. They were relying on penalties. And that's what was getting them up the field and getting those chances.
So you have to say, so like, absolutely. I think one of the, I think it was Clark Dermody that actually said it when they interviewed him on sideline sort of thing while the game was going on, and saying, oh, we need to start holding on to the ball and those little mistakes happening. But the other thing was that this that rare purple patch sort of happened for the Chiefs in that first sort of 25, 30 minutes as well, where everything that they did just seemed to come off as well, which really happens for a footy team to get no knock-ons, no drop passes or anything like that. So the combination of the fact that the Highlanders had soap on their hands, probably maybe some hand sanitizer, and the Chiefs, basically everything stuck because they had crazy glue on their hands. So it's, I think that was the, and then that wasn't going to, it wasn't going to go for 80 for the Chiefs. And once the Highlanders started to sort of settle and get some gameplay together, then I thought, I always felt, even with the big lead, the Highlanders were always in the game. I don't know why, but it just felt like they could come back.
Because they weren't really playing that badly. Like, I just literally just watched the game. It's literally I'm staring at a paused screen of CEO Tompkinson, just scoring that try. And I think it's just going to stay on my screen forever there on that glorious moment. But they weren't playing that badly. I was watching. I'm like, how are the Chiefs actually winning this game by so much? Because the Highlanders aren't playing poorly. They're just not finishing the chances. They're getting in the right areas. They're doing the right things. And then they'll do something stupid. Bang, penalty. You're 50, 60 metres back up the field again. The Chiefs took their chances. I don't think they weren't fantastic, but they took their chances. And that's the main thing about it. They had some average minutes in defence, I think, the Highlanders. But overall, I think if things were equal, which they never are, that game was probably the Highlanders were a better team over that first half on chance creation, on getting into the right areas of the field and things like that. That's just what it felt like. I was expecting to come home and watch a game where I was just sitting here, hitting hands going, oh, how did you do that again?
Like I did on Saturday night.
They kind of played pretty well. Sunday night.
I think that
let me just throw some stats at you to put back up. So look, this was a 2-point game at the end. This finished 31-33. Okay, but now clean breaks. 3 to the Chiefs, 12 to the Highlanders.
That's what Steve said.
The tackles, the Chiefs had to make 129, the Highlanders only 73. Meters run, 260 by the Chiefs, 648 by the Highlanders. I mean, crazy amount of running there. And again, territory and possession, or possession and territory, you go that way around, 62%, 65% to the Highlanders, pretty much the same in both halves. It just came down to making it stick. And a couple of things. I think, yes, putting and as much as this is going to hurt some of the Blues, but putting Collins in at 13 really shored things up, and kind of gave them a bit of dependency. And Josh McKay had a decent game as well.
Collins decent. Looked good against the Chiefs side. Let's remember that.
Decent. He taught him to every time Josh McKay touched the ball, he made a half break. He made literally a half break, and if he got an offload away, there you go, bang, the Highlanders were away. He was amazing, and as the game wore on, he just got better and better and better. His confidence grew up. But I mean, the man I want to give the most props to is Mitch Hunt. He's come along this season. He has gone from just an average plodding number 10 who kicks goals, kicks to the corner, passes to the guy outside him. He has a running game now. Man, he has his acceleration and his little step off a point is so dangerous. He actually like can snap through and take guys out, pulls the band on us. He doesn't want to talk about the Highlanders anymore. And he just can break the line. His running game is it's extraordinary.
But you're the only one that thought that, because I always thought he was actually quite good. I was just like, we've seen him play in a blue and white jersey. We've seen him play in the Crusaders jersey. We've seen him play for Tasman. No, he's got a running game. He keeps the defensive line guessing. Is he going to pass? Is he going to kick? Is he going to run? And that's what you want from a first five, right? Because then you don't know as a defensive line what you're going to do. So no, I've actually thought that he's always been a good first five, but you've always just thought that, hey, Ioane was the preferred number one down in your Islanders country.
And I guess it comes down to the fact that was he playing for the confidence in his own ability, or was he just playing out there to do a job and fill a hole? Because it seems like that, you know, through Super Rugby earlier, pre-COVID, now in those first couple of rounds, he wasn't really into it. Then he started to make a couple of breaks and he started to get that confidence. And then Ioane got that injury that's going to be out for longer. And he's like, well, hey, now I got to go for it and continue to try this sort of game because it's creating space. And then, you know, if Rob Thompson was actually playing in form, then we could get a little bit more out of that. But yeah, we're getting finishes on the wings. Jonah Nurecki, how good was that thrust from him to score that try near the end as well? Out of nothing. Hey, yep. X factor. That's what we've needed. Needed a guy who can create something from nothing. Waisaki Naholo 2.0, welcome back. We've got a guy on the other wing who's actually making breaks through the defensive line. We've got a fly half who can actually break the defensive line. Yes, it's the Chiefs, but we've beaten them twice. And that's all that matters now. We're not going to finish last. Right. So all you haters out there that said the Highlanders are going to be fifth,
4 points
stick that
in total.
In the pipe.
It's like, but hey, just coming back, you know, we go back to being, you know, the armchair selectors and the like. We've been saying, why isn't Josh McKay being selected since this competition started,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
This is like, hello. This is like, I think when you know what the guy can do, it's just like you're left scratching your head. Why isn't he being picked?
He's been amazing. It's just the impact he made straight away. It was so plain to see. His pace on the ball, he just stood out. He stood out in the team with them going averagely or decently and just stood out as an exceptional player. I've given him a bit of slack about being pretty poor since he came from the Crusaders, but that was a Crusader-like performance to
I was just going to say, it's a typical Cantab type back, and the fact is that they're always busy. You know, they don't it's not like, oh, this is my spot on the field and this is where I stand. It's just like, where can I get myself involved in the game? That's what he does.
Okay, guys, the big one now. How is Sam Kane the captain of the All Blacks? He looked clueless, apparently. What is Foster thinking? Thoughts on Sam Kane?
Outclassed. Dylan Hunt.
And there goes the whiskey.
To be fair, if Steve's picking the All Blacks, he's taking off the Highlanders jerseys and putting black ones on them, right?
Go on. But now, two of them his favorite. Frizzell.
Back to Sam Kane. I think even the old veteran Keith Quinn is on Twitter today, made a comment about why was Sam Kane named as captain of the All Blacks so far back, and is he performing now to deserve that? And it's just like, no. In fact, when Kieran Reid left as All Blacks captain, there shouldn't have been a captain named. There should be, you know, it's an open environment, really. I mean, you got to pick the squad, then name your captain for when you're doing with the transition from an old captain to a new captain. Yeah, and the fact is that Sam Kane doesn't own that position. He hasn't owned that position. So that's another reason you could do it.
Old or traditional style of doing things.
If we're not going to select him in a black jersey, we're going to have an all black off the field that can't even get a black jersey.
You can do media.
You can do media, yeah. Do interviews on the sideline.
That's what it is. They're thinking ahead. Don't have the tired guy thinking notes, strategic thinking, media. Bang, I'm on it. I think Sam Kane's going to be there straight away. He's going to be there before the media, suit and tie, ready to go.
Boom.
Look, we've been saying for you don't pick your captain for just the next game, right? You're picking your captain for the next 4 years, up to the next Rugby World Cup. That's how it's done nowadays. And that's why they pick someone that they believe that has shown over the last two World Cup cycles that he is. That he is going to be there in the squad is a key member of the squad that a lot of other players respect, and that's why he's been picked. He's not been picked purely on current form. He's been picked on class, and over the next 4 years, he'll be a key member of that All Black squad.
I feel like are you the PR manager for Sam Kane? Nice sales pitch.
Is he going to be there in 4 years?
I think it was Namibia back in 2015 at the Rugby World Cup in England. I said he is the next All Blacks captain after Kieran Reid. It was clear he was going to be. He's been groomed.
There's no doubt that there's been some grooming going on behind the scenes. But the fact is that you wouldn't pick him in an All Black squad at the moment.
And that's you shouldn't pick your coach before you do the rest of that. Ian Foster was groomed to be the coach. How well is that going for everyone?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Also, I mean, there are other players who've been picked in the past. Marnonu was another one who would look awful at Super Rugby, put the All Blacks jersey on and suddenly click, bang.
But unfortunately, Sam hasn't looked great in an All Blacks jersey either recently.
I'm trying to think when's the last time he played in the World
Cup. Remember, I'm going back to World Cup, I guess.
Yeah. So it's there's also that part. It is a different environment for that. Now, boys, obviously we can still go for another couple of hours if you want to, but I think we've probably covered off on most of the things that we have to. And there's also a lot of other things we could talk about. Players or things you want to talk about at some from this Chiefs Highland or actually from the weekend? Any last points you want to make?
I think Steve raised Steve Harrison raised on Twitter about whether Beauden Barrett is delivering for the Blues or not. He's not at the top of his form there, but at the end of the day, he's still performing a task, I believe, in helping the players around him. So I still think that it's still the better of the options in terms of selection. Possibly the only thing that you'd be saying is that, well, not possibly, but you probably really do want to see him in a 10 jersey. But then the question mark is, have we got a good experienced 15 to go in at the back? I mean, Matt Duffy is there, but it's just like, it's all the juggling of the players and what you can get out of the team. And it's like, is having Matt Duffy at the back better than Beauden Barrett? Or, is Beauden Barrett at the 15 better? Or is it better off having him in 10? Then how's O'Terry Black fitting into the picture? Or, so I sort of think at the moment it's a hard one. And the fact is that we know that Beauden Barrett's not going to be there at the Blues next year. So why not give O'Terry as much time in the number 10 jersey as possible for next season as well? Because at the end of the day, we're talking about the Crusaders have got a 1.5 hands on the cup. You do look at this now and say, look, we're developing for the next year's Super Rugby competition.
What do you do with the Blues anyway? Is O'Terry Black actually fit to play next weekend? Because he was injured.
So I saw Paul Alexander, who runs the Blues Supporters for Life, was down in Wellington, and he tweeted the fact that O'Terry went to hospital later in that evening because he was getting tingling down the side. So you know, if he's getting that, then there's quite a high chance that he won't be playing next week, which means that Beauden Barrett would be in the 10 jersey most likely.
No. Harry Plummer to 10. Bone will stay. Hey, Bone is interesting. Carter at 12. Bone is
the promising. The promising player, Daniel Carter at 12.
I think he's easing through the season.
He's new in a Blues jersey. He must be a new player.
He's not even going hard. I mean, I think the one time we've seen Barrett actually go hard was after he got burnt by Lamarpe in that game, and he scored that try straight after. There was points to be proved. I think Lamarpe proved the point that he is an X-factor player that has pace, power, and everything you desire. And then Barrett said, you're not doing it on my watch. I'm going to show you what I can offer. And then he went back to fullback. The two said, fair play, lad. And they went back to their normal roles and carried on after that. I don't think Bowden's really going at 110% in the season.
No, he's
trying to win. Of course, we're not saying he's not trying to win the game. He's not doing his best for the Blues. But he can do a lot more.
He can do a lot more.
And I think he's cruising along.
He made an interesting comment. It's just like just in one of the post, you know, game things, the interviews thing. So it's like, you know, he made a Mark comment is that, yeah, I'd like to get the ball, my hands on the ball a lot more often. So I think he actually would like to be in that 10 jersey, although he obviously toes the party line, so to speak. But I think he wants to be in the 10 jersey with that comment like that. And next week we'll probably get the chance.
He understands what the future is looking like for the Blues as well, because he knows he's not going to be there next year. I think he's known all along he's not going to be there next year. And I think, you know, for the betterment of the club, he's not an idiot. He'll know that you've got to put someone in that position. And Black's a guy that's really stood up. And you're right in the chat what they're saying there, that he's come on leaps and bounds this season. He's really actually coming on an established player. But how much of that is the confidence of knowing that he's got that fallback plan? He's got a Beauden Barrett guy that can cover him when he's buried at the bottom of a ruck and doing things like that. But hey, it's good for his confidence. It's good for the Blues. But yeah, next season, are we going to be sitting there going, oh, we've got troubles at 10 at the Blues again when they're sitting down in fourth position battling to beat the Chiefs?
Ahead of the Highlanders.
Another question of why do you think Gatland is struggling so much with the Chiefs? We've talked about this quite a bit during the beginning of Super Rugby Aotearoa, and so we haven't been talking about it so much now because it's just become kind of part of it, which is just injuries in that tight five are a real problem for that for the Chiefs.
You'd have to say that. I mean, like, there's elements of the game there the Chiefs still aren't gelling, even for the fact that they're missing a lot of players through injury and the like. But there's still elements that, you know, you look at it and I just sort of think things they got lucky for 30 minutes today where things just, as I said, purple patch, everything came off. But generally they seem quite messy all round. And it's just like, even when you have injuries in that, and we've seen teams do this, is the fact is that they still able to get a good performance together, and nothing seems to be working for them. Everything they try just basically turns to custard.
Well, I would love to sit here and talk about how great the Highlanders were, how good Marino Makalitu'u will look in black later on the season alongside, you know, Shannon Frizzell and
Dylan Hunt.
How brilliant they all were. I'll give a little bit of a shout out to the Blues. How good was Antonina Brown switching from 12 to 13? Massive difference. And how much of an effect did that have on Damien McKenzie's game, who had that reliable guy sitting outside him that he could use as an outlet? Damien McKenzie actually took on the line. He didn't take on the sidelines. He took on the defensive line, a massive, massive difference to how the Chiefs actually attacked, which I think was the main contributor. He was going forward. He was a danger. He was taking on defenders. Then he was offloading. Antonina Brown was actually going forward and a presence. Not like he's nothing at 12. You'd hardly see him. He gets the odd hit up, gets smashed and goes backwards. He was actually going forwards now, getting on the outside shoulder of players. Defensively, he was doing some good work in that area as well. But probably the biggest one, I think, for the Chiefs is Lachlan Boshier. Where's he been all season? Now he's back. He is back, and he is a guy who makes an impact. He gets penalties. He is, I think, finally just got used to this game now. It's changed on him. It's not how he knew. I think he struggled to pick it up. He struggled to adapt to the way it goes now. But now he's getting those ruck tip penalties again. He's getting those turnovers. He's becoming a big presence in the team. And those sort of elements, I think, have really changed the Chiefs, having McKenzie attack, Leonard Brown actually taking the ball forward, and Boshier actually being a menace on defence, but he was still outplayed by Dylan Hunt.
Hey, when's the last time Gatlin went 0-5 as a coach?
I think he has like 8 games losses on the trot for Wales at one point.
Really? Oh wow. Okay.
Was that not
Wales did that when he was away with the Lions or something like that? Was it actually Gatlin actually coaching?
I think it was Gatlin actually coaching because something like they came here and had like lost 3 on the bounce to New Zealand, then
which they were always going to do right.
The Six Nations. Then they went back in November and sort of had South Africa, Australia, New Zealand again. Right. One of those situations.
Yep.
So I think that's where it's
When he had some real competition, he struggles.
And yeah, so the first game of next season will be the record breaker when he loses his 9th game on the trot. What do you reckon?
Well, Batman reckons I'm wrong. He reckons it was Rob Healy I've gone blank. Anyway.
That's what I was thinking too. That's what I was thinking is that it was when Gatlin was actually taken a leave of absence because he was involved with the Lions. But, this, you get old, you forget things. So I'm old and I forget things. What are we doing here tonight?
Maybe I can finish it off. But don't worry, we're only 45 minutes over a half hour show. I do think, look, everything comes easier when you got front football, and it's the front five that quite often give you that front football. So to me, I think that's a big part of this for the Chiefs is the fact they've lost too many front five players through injury, to be honest with you. That's a big part of it. Howley, not Healy. Yes, you're right. Quite right. So Noxonal writes. Cool. Stephen, have I given you your chance to say the last thing for the weekend?
I think I've said plenty of enough last things for the weekend, but I mean, best team of the round. Highlanders, captivating 20 minutes. Keep it up, boys, and we'll see. We'll do it again next weekend.
Best team of the round, Reds? No. Okay, no, you're not good.
Reds. The team in grey. How bad are those kits? Do we want to start another rant about how bad those kits are? God,
oh, they're awake for 2 hours. The Blues didn't wear their away kit in Wellington, did they?
No, they didn't actually. You're right.
That's about the first time I think I've seen the super side.
We should go away from home and away kits. We just need a kit and the alternate, so no clash kit.
Yeah,
we don't need home and away. that's a TV program.
One last rant about colours. If anyone from Rugby Past is watching, the Highlanders aren't yellow, okay, for your stats. The Highlanders aren't yellow. The Chiefs can go as yellow, but the Highlanders aren't yellow. Let's get some separation and colours on that as well. Stats, yellow and yellow, don't work. I don't care who you work for. Find some separation of colours on that as well, please. That's my last rage.
So my advice is don't go to Rugby Past. Go to ESPN.com for your stats. I prefer the layout personally. And there they had black and blue. Nice. None of this yellow stuff for the Highlanders. There you go.
I like Batman's comics, by the way. Keep it up.
Bring back the maroon.
Well, that too. Yep. The Highlanders come back from 50 next week. Just to be a challenge. Yeah, they're just toying with the Chiefs. It's like, well, they're already finishing last. Let's give them a bit of confidence and see if they can upset the Hurricanes later on in the season so we can snaffle back that third spot.
They can come back from 100 next week. They got a bye.
Oh, week after. But they probably will come back for 50. There's no one on the other side.
Oh, dear. Folks, please do like, subscribe, all of that kind of stuff, and do share with all your friends. Look, we're trying to grow this New Zealand sports radio, covering lots of stuff and joining you at and bringing your shows every single day. So do all of that, please. If you'd like to support the channel, thank you so much to Alex, who did the super chat for us on YouTube. If you listen to the podcast, look, there's a link down below. Link in the show notes where you can do a one-off subscription, or you can go over to drivingmore.com and become a monthly supporter using Patreon. So please, folks, your support would be much appreciated. But the main thing is sharing and growing the audience. So please do that, folks. I'll be back tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. with a morning sports briefing with Stephen and Ashwin. We'll be back tomorrow night at 8 p.m. with the Driving Maul show, where we'll be talking a lot about club rugby. We've got to look at New Zealand's Super Rugby setup. We've got the Farrah Palmer Cup schedule out there as well. So lots of topics to cover off the pitch tomorrow on the Driving Maul show. So do join us tomorrow at 8 p.m. for that one. Thank you, boys. Have a great, hope you had a great weekend. Monday, folks, don't get too depressed.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
it. Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.